For October the 7th, 2016, we talk about Twitch Prime, Divinity Original Sin, and we ask you if any game has gotten one of your occupations correct. Welcome to Level 168. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you for being understanding about our skip week last week. A lot of things happened. Chief among them, I got incredibly sick. So good old-fashioned early October, late September flu. But laid me out like just a baby. Like, I haven't been like disabled sick like that since I was like a kid, like early teenager.
Unless you guys wanted to retchcast 2016.
Well, it's weird because usually, and this isn't going to get too terribly gross. Usually, mine is kind of like a stomach flu. This was kind of like a scary, like existential, full body dread.
Kind of thing
that just kind of like made its way into just a very high fever and like body aches and stuff. And it was just like, I can't even be upright. Like, it was so bad that I put on Bob's Burgers because that's one of my comfort shows. I couldn't even watch it. I just laid in bed, like holding on to the bed frame with my eyes closed and the fan just kind of like pointed at me, just listening to Bob's Burgers because that's all that I could do.
I'm glad you survived.
Me too. So and you know, I thank you guys here for understanding about that as well.
Totally was fine with me because I needed the sleep anyway.
Yeah, well, you're rolling up. You've got your not your half marathon, but you have like a qualifying event coming up, right?
Actually, yeah, I have a half marathon coming up. You did remember that correctly.
Okay.
So I ran 17.3 miles on Saturday, so I'm already ready for it. I'm good. And that was at marathon pace, so I'm good.
Yeah.
I got it.
So what is marathon pace?
Marathon pace is just however fast you are to go during the marathon, like a full marathon. Okay. I want to have to double check and see what my half marathon pace is supposed to be. What they do to calculate that is basically you run your fastest possible mile, and then from that number of how fast you run a mile, they calculate out like what your, you know, projected speeds would be for 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon. Yeah. And that kind of dictates your speed during different parts of the training. So,
yeah, it stands to a little bit of reason that your marathon pace would actually be a little bit more measured than your short distance pace.
Yeah. A half marathon is like about 30 seconds, faster than my full marathon pace. So like if I'm running more miles, like 17.3 miles at, you know, my full marathon pace with a little bit more pushing and a little bit less distance, you know, like I'm already at my projected half marathon speed. So, if I can run it slow, then I'm fine. Like I've been doing speed work throughout the week. So, you know, I'd be good.
Your full marathon pace is 30 seconds off your half marathon pace, as in the second half takes you 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a certain amount of like aerodynamics, right? Like you know, as you approach light speed, you know, like you break that plane and that threshold, then all of a sudden she just goes shooting off like Chevy Chase and Christmas Vacation on that sled.
Your second half is supposed to be faster than your first half, so.
Well, no, I'm about in the middle pace group of like the entire running group that I'm in. So I'm not like the fastest. I'm not the slowest. I'm not the fastest. But then again, I only started running in April. So, I mean, I've been speeding up. I'm getting faster all the time. So, you know, next year, we'll see how fast I am.
Yeah. Ben, what you been up to?
Not a whole lot. I went out of town last week, so it was a good thing that we didn't have the show. But I'm back in town now, and I don't know. Mostly playing video games, not being productive.
As
eating
we do.
Pizza.
Nice. And Dennis, how about you? You were away for a little bit.
Yeah, just traveling and then hanging out here. So I took my turn being the problem with recording.
Yeah.
But I've been playing plenty of games to talk about. That's for sure.
Awesome. Well, that'll make up for me. Nice. Well, I don't see any reason why we should delay getting started, so let us go on with our usual kind of show we've got for you tonight, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to start with the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, I want to hear what you've got.
Okay, so Neil deGrasse Tyson is making an online multiplayer game called Space Odyssey, where you create and expand galactic civilizations. So I don't pay very much attention to him, but apparently he's known for explaining why movies and games are unrealistic as if anybody but David Moneysmith cares.
You know? To be fair, a lot of people get angry when he tells them that they're BB-8.
I know. I had to crack the joke and poke fun at David just because it's been a while since David has been mentioned, and I don't know if any of the newer listeners even know who David is anymore.
Hey, I just flooded the chamber with a whole bunch of old episodes since I changed the feed provider. So people had a lot of level history foisted upon them, which I'm very sorry.
No, that means that they have a perfect opportunity to download all of that and listen to all about the Davids. So so anyway,
sounds like a different podcast.
About...
Yes.
Okay, so continuing on about this game. The foundation is based in scientifically accurate gameplay with an educational element. This is a quote from Tyson himself.
Kind of doing a little bit of an impression.
Sure.
I was going to ask, do we get to listen to his voice? Because if that's so, I am in for this game. Bar is high, Cole.
So he's making it scientifically accurate, but it is about interplanetary colonization.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The website
for it. Stare at the stars and say one day for the entire game.
Well, if you go to the website itself focuses more on the gaminess, of course, because that's what everybody wants is the game part of it, not like, you know, the educational part of it. But anyway, from the website, it says that you can grow galaxies, develop planets, colonize worlds, nurture species, harvest, mine, explore, and discover unique life forms and civilizations.
Hmm.
The company that's working on it is called Whatnot Entertainment. I have no idea what else they've ever made. I meant to look it up and I forgot before when I was getting ready for the show. So I don't know what they do. But they aim to follow the Minecraft model, meaning that they basically want to make a community that is interested in the design side of things, the way that Minecraft has all the people doing their thing.
And then get rich and become convinced that you're God.
Yeah, exactly. So... They apparently do have partnerships with Bigelow Airspace and the National Space Society for consulting on tech and design. So there is that, although that doesn't necessarily mean much because, I mean, Resident Evil has military advisors, and I'll talk more about that. Resident Evil 6 has military advisor. I will talk about that multiplayer. But players apparently can not only create their own galaxy but also explore other people's galaxies. There are apparently some celebs signed up for this, like Bill Nye, George R. R. Martin, Neil Gaiman, Peter Beagle, and of course Neil deGrasse Tyson himself will be making one. And it's being developed for Windows, Mac, Linux, mobile, and VR. Notably, there is no console. There is just PC, mobile, and VR. It is expected to be ready for beta testing sometime next year. So that's a thing.
Huh.
So that's all I know about it. But
so, yeah. I mean, I'm curious. It definitely has a lot of, like, star power kind of behind it, but that is no guarantee that it's going to be fun.
Good. I don't know what Whatnot Entertainment has ever done, so I guess I should be looking that up.
Well, looking at their website, it appears to be like they're a video production company. Like their front page is like animation, motion comics, and then stereoscopic conversion, which I guess is like post production 3D kind of stuff. So I can't imagine what they're gonna do.
I don't know.
Yeah,
the game is more of a visual novel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say you could just make the game just Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about stuff, and that would be fine. Like, I would be entertained by that.
So. I'm so inspired. I just said I like this cheeseburger. Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious if anyone who's heading this up has heard of Spore and what kind of cues they are taking or not taking from it.
It's or a good No Man's question. Sky.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. you can't say yeah. Spore nowadays without people getting really, really angry about No Man's Sky.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was wondering, no too. Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering, too, given the fact that, like, the article emphasizes, like, oh, we've got these science-y people behind it. But then, like, what about the gamey part of it? Like, where's that coming from? Do they know what they're talking about within, like, the gaming framework? That they're trying to build this on? I don't know. So we'll see. You know, maybe if it ends up being a beta thing, and if somebody signs up for that beta, you know, let me know what goes on with that. So.
Yeah, well, we'll follow it.
Yep.
Dennis, I'm curious about about this Titanfall thing you've got.
Yeah, well, I think the one lesson that everyone on Twitter needs to learn is don't tweet pictures of your disc.
Oh, I mean,
just you don't put it out there. That's taken down so many people.
Lesson one is don't be on Twitter.
Well, yeah. Oh, you got that right. No, this is very much a story of Twitter's being Twitter, and it's sad and a little bit amusing all at the same time.
So I'm looking at here is a fairly innocuous photograph of a PS4 disc.
No. You would think,
Jelly, you're trying to cut it. I'm sorry. What's What are you saying, Jella?
So the lesson is no disc pics.
Yes.
Pretty good.
So Respawn tweeted out a photo of their PlayStation 4 green disc, is what they call it, I guess, for Titanfall 2, which is like, hey, they've gone gold, essentially. They've finished it. And when you print a sample disc that apparently the main console manufacturer sends to you, it's in the industry referred to as a green disc. But anyway, the first wave of you know, lashback or rage on Twitter was the fact they tweeted out a picture of a PS4 disc and not an Xbox One disc, which, you know, the original
Titanfall. That's the one that brought you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that was tweeted at them, you know, at least 100 times.
Yeah.
Over the course of the past day. But yeah, so, you know, notably it's gone multi-platform when the first game was exclusive, and read into that whatever you will if you want to fan the console war flames. But people reacted. And so, trying to explain themselves and be friendly about it, Respawn tweeted out just kind of another picture with the Xbox One, you know, green disc, which is really like the main heading of it is Technicolor Poland. Check disc only is the other copy on it. So it's very unfinished, right?
Right.
And so they just shared that and said, you know, here's the green disc. It's not very sexy. Then people got mad because they thought they were saying that Xbox One wasn't sexy. That's right. Heroes on Twitter rising up to defend the sexiness of the Xbox honor. One.
The honor. You know what? Don't system shame. Come on. Not cool. God,
right?
Fucking dicks.
Yeah. Like, so, all
that means
all
we
this
pretty much
like
have to send them death threats now, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Laugh so you don't try, or don't try, don't cry. So, you know, and this is a developer trying to do like the right thing and be open and share stuff about what they're doing with their fans, like. This in general is a very good thing, and it just, you know, exploded in the worst possible way.
I mean, the initial tweet is like social media 101. Like, you just kind of like just post little pictures of like behind the scenes, like, here's a momentous thing. Like, You know, you just take it and you share it, you know? But, like, oh, God. But, like, just the fact, you know, this isn't exactly a one-to-one, but, like, people responding, say, you know, to the whole notice it's not very sexy or green, you know, to the Xbox One, you know, green disc thing, like, being so dense as to not see that, it makes me, it feels a little bit like somebody, like listening for, like you people. What do you mean, you people? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop it. Just fucking calm down for, like, a second.
Put the knife away.
It's a bummer that it ruins the fact that, like, the story's supposed to be about that the game's finished. So, like, that's exciting, right?
Yeah.
My favorite part about this article is their measurement for the fact that the feud or the rage is dying down is that they were currently on Twitter, as of time of posting of the article, more people apologizing for the dicks than people being dicks. So that was... The tide has turned back.
Well, no, we're participating in this, but you have to, like, it's kind of like counting tree rings. So there's the initial outrage. There's people being outraged about the initial outrage, and there's people being outraged about the outrage to the initial outrage, and then on and so, you know, like, so on in kind. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So this will ripple across the interwebs forever, I am sure.
They're going to be aliens, you know, a century down the line. You know, that will have heard word of the Titanfall 2.
We think this planet met its downfall when the indigenous species started a flame war over a game called Titanfall 2.
Yeah, well, they call the first one the Great Titanfall up until Titanfall 2 came out. Then it was just Titanfall 1.
That's good. Yeah, so that's my story.
That's dumb.
You sticking to it?
Why did you tell me about that dumb thing? Now that's in my head.
It isn't.
I'll point out that Titanfall 2 kind of looks like Portal 2 a little bit, just with the 2 and the blue line being vertical.
No,
but whatever.
Bit, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just the way that it's stylized.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Ben, you and I inadvertently chose the same story because I found it and that I forgot to put it into the Slack. So why don't we tag team it? Tell me what Amazon and Twitch are doing.
So if you have an Amazon Prime account, so right now there's Amazon Prime, which is like a specialty service for Amazon, and there's Twitch Turbo, which is kind of like a specialty service for Twitch. They're linking those two things together since they're owned by the same company. So if you have an Amazon Prime account, you can hook that up to a Twitch Turbo account. And they're adding new perks for your Amazon account tied into Twitch.
Yeah.
Some of the perks include discounted box games when they're released.
Yeah, that's actually been around. That was a part of Prime. Like, on new box games, you got like 20% off. This is going to sound like it is a commercial for Amazon. It's not. This is more of like a PSA. There's so much that Amazon is putting into their fucking services, specifically into Prime, that, like, you could legit be forgiven for not knowing that you could take advantage of this kind of stuff. Like, oh, you can just pay 20% less on games forever as long as you pay this $100 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other things they mentioned, you get free subscription. I think it's doled out like one per month for Twitch channels. I didn't know that was not free, but
no. Okay. So there's a difference between subscribing and following.
Okay.
And this is actually what this kind of amounts to is Amazon saying, like, okay, Twitch and people who make content for Twitch, which in turn makes money for both Twitch and Amazon, we're going to basically subsidize and pour a shitload of money into selected streamers. Basically, anybody who is like a Twitch partner or a featured Twitch channel, people normally can say, like, hey, I want to subscribe to this channel, which is like a premium kind of thing, and it's like $5 a month, and some large portion of that goes to the streamer, in addition to like those bits things we talked about a while back.
I still am not clear what you get for subscribing. Is it just ad free or like
it's not even ad free. Like it is almost entirely just a way to support the streamer, which is cool.
It's a tip,
right? Yeah. It's like a tip. It's, you know, it's basically like a small scale Patreon for people who stream. And like you also get like if a certain number of people subscribe, like there are custom like per channel emotes that you can get. Like it's like a bunch of like little community kind of things, and all of that's like really cool. Like I applied for Twitch partnership or whatever for DuckFeed, but we just don't have the viewership and we don't have the audience necessary to like make that happen. But like this whole move by basically saying, hey, everybody, you know, you know, your Prime subscription is going to include a free way to do this. That's a subsidy for streamers. And also it's getting people kind of used to the idea of kind of giving away money to streamers. So like this is kind of this weird little reallocation of things to really try and funnel as many people into that ecosystem as possible.
Mm-hmm. So once per month, you can act like you're giving $5 away. And I guess you kind of are.
Right. Yeah, well, once per month, you get to decide who you... Yeah. as best as I can tell, scream into a camera for 8 hours a day, every day, do that for about 3 years. This is important. Start 4 years ago. and then build up an audience of more than just like a max of 21 people, which is what I get. You know? Yeah.
You and me both, bro.
Yeah.
That's monumental compared to the numbers I pull down,
but it's great.
That's not why we're doing it.
No, it's because it's fun to like talk with people. It's a cool hang. But I guess what I mean is like just there are different levels of it, and like that is the way to get rich off of that is to really really push and maximize for the audience. There's something weird about this. I need to pause that video where you get free in-game loot every month plus surprises.
Yeah, this is relevant to me because the first big one is a Hearthstone hero portrait, which is purely cosmetic, but is desirable to me because I'm a fan of that game. So fortunately, I already have Prime, and so it's just going to come to me. It's like easy to get. Unfortunately, I was talking with people on the Slack and the Hearthstone channel, and the problem is if you have Prime, great. If you have never had Prime, you can get a 30-day free trial, and great, pick it up. If you've had Prime and let it lapse, there's no way for you to get this hero other than to invest in Prime again. Mm. Which, you know, I see the value in, but not everyone has that money to invest in Prime, and right. Certainly not everyone, or certainly almost everyone, has tried Prime at some point.
Right.
So that locks a lot of people out. And they've said they're not considering new models for how to get it right now, but they've, they've kind of been vague about it, so I don't know if it'll ever be possible to just pick this hero up directly, which would be nice.
Yeah.
So PSA, if anybody wants one of those things, I'm probably not going to take anything as long as it's not Rocket League, so I will gladly give that away.
Yeah. talk to Ben in the Slack. So what this tells me, too, again, looking for the strings behind this, trying to find the crux, what this tells me as well is that all of a sudden Amazon and Twitch are partnering with developers, specifically developers of games that, like, a huge component of their ongoing popularity is the continued streaming kind of thing. So, like, that's smart, right? Especially for these, you know, think about what Blizzard gets by saying like, well, let's just take this piece of garbage art that unused art that we would have had lying around anyway, and like, let's make this like an incentive for people, you know, to get into this.
It's literally a JPEG and maybe six voice lines. So it's pretty easy for them to. I can't believe, because Tomb Raider, the Rise of the Tomb Raider, had this Twitch integration thing where people could like vote and it was built into the game. And I cannot believe that there hasn't been more stuff like that. I'm really curious if like the Tomb Raider thing was just an abject failure or what. Because that's kind of the direction you're describing, Cole. And I don't know why people wouldn't do more to integrate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it may have just not been a good fit for Twitch streaming in general.
I could kind of see it being a dicey prospect because you're, you know, like putting this gameplay mechanic tying to another company. Like if that company for some reason says like, no, you can't do that, or we don't want to support that, you know, like that could be a lot of wasted effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still acknowledging that, you know, Twitch is here to stay and that it is, like you said, a huge like PR factor for your game and a huge mm-hmm. longevity factor for your game.
Yeah.
It seems like a risk worth taking.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just development cycles, although that game has been out for a long time. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a lot of studios are taking like a wait and see kind of thing, or maybe they just don't have an idea. You know, I'd rather they not go off half cocked.
They pulled a who was that? Fatal Frame or something like that that patented the loading screen game, so no one else can have it.
And that was Namco.
There you go.
That did that. Yeah.
Even though they're not really using it.
I think that patent might be up pretty soon, though, actually, because it's been about 20 years since they did that.
Can't come soon enough.
Maybe. Yeah. So this is, I don't know. I think it's cool. Like this falls under a PSA kind of thing. Like, you probably have Prime. I would not have thought to do this if it wasn't blasted out on a bunch of news things. Fuck it. Give $5 to somebody who screams into a camera.
Well, Cole, you're excluding yourself, because I don't know if I've ever seen you scream into the camera while streaming. So,
well, first off, there's no camera, and usually if I people who have watched me stream know when I get angry, I don't scream. I get quiet for 20 minutes at a time.
Fists are just two balls of red anger.
Yeah, but just 15 minutes of silence, and then fuck. Sorry, downstairs neighbor.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. The question that was put out here, Dennis, you posted this. It comes via Greg. What did Greg ask?
Yeah, Greg had a great question, which is, do you have experience with any occupations or activities that are depicted in games? And if so, how do you feel about the way games treat them? Are there any aspects that games get wrong or could represent better?
Yeah, and I appreciate this image that you chose of Root Beer Tapper.
Yeah.
Tapper's yes, a fun indeed. Game.
Such a fun game.
Yeah. So Michael says, I'm a chef, and I've worked in food service my whole life. Game depictions of cooking are often very bright, cheery affairs. This couldn't be more different than real kitchen life. I want a greasy, ragged kitchen team held together with duct tape and stainless steel. The restaurant biz has a whole different culture than the rest of the world. The people are gritty, colorful, bizarre. Gritty, colorful, and bizarre. If someone could capture all of that in a game, I'd love it with every inch of my being. Oh God! All this makes me want is like a VR. Okay, so make it a Vive game or a Vive game of Cutthroat Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Except Alton Brown is like an Eternal Darkness Arkham Knight sanity effect. Like, you will just kind of like like as you turn your back, like, and then like
just starts taunting you.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, I'm gonna go over here, I'm gonna saute this for a second, then you're just like, wait a minute, he warps to be like right by you, like, that's a little hot there, isn't it? Okay. Not the way that I do it. No.
That's great. Yeah, I maybe it's just because Darkest Dungeon is on the brain because someone was streaming it in the Slack. But I would love this kind of like colorful and bizarre people, like some kind of relationship management component to keeping a kitchen staffed. Just like, okay, can't put so-and-so on the line with so-and-so because they'll, you know, freaking blow up at each other. And so-and-so expects a promotion by X date, but he's not going to get it because I really need to keep my star guy there, but that's going to cause drama. And like, I could see that being interesting as well.
Oh, and we could license it after the hit mid-2000s Ryan Reynolds and Luis Guzman comedy Waiting. Actually, I think that was a Justin Long movie. Fuck.
No, I like Luis Guzman getting second billing. I think that's fair.
It doesn't happen enough. let's see. Jello, what does Eric say?
Eric says, I work in IT. Not sure if there's any games based on that. Actually, this is an opportunity for me to ask, are you aware of any games that are based on IT? Games where you play as a hacker are in the realm of computers, but that's a different profession, in my opinion. And then Dennis commented, keep talking and nobody explodes, maybe?
Yeah, that's at the customer service side of IT, though.
Yeah. Fair enough, yeah. But I thought that one was a pretty good fit.
Yeah. Uplink? I don't know. Yeah, that's so I, you know, given that I've done nothing but make videos about IT topics for 5 years, it's bizarre how little I know about like the day-to-day life of an IT person. I know a lot about the tools they use, but like I don't know enough about what Eric does on a day-to-day to actually say like, oh, there's elements of this in that game.
I assume it's just like Deus Ex hacking.
Yep.
There you go. Cole, you know everything about IT marketing guys and nothing about actual IT guys.
Right. It's like, yeah. like occasionally they'll be like, okay, well, this is a pretty heady topic we're talking about, so we really ought to get an SME in here, get a subject matter expert. And then like, okay, well, we'll schedule, and then like we have to wait 2 weeks because those are very busy people who are doing real and difficult jobs, and then the marketing person just talks over them the entire time. Or contradicts them or anything like that. It's like, well, I don't know why we did any of this. This has been a colossal waste of time.
That sounds frustrating.
Can you tell why I'm not client-facing anymore?
Good to Epifio. Bring him into meetings with a muzzle.
Go to epifio.tv so you can see what I've been doing with my life for the past 8 months.
I saw that video. It was cool.
Freaking awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. The cognitive biases one. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah.
Got more coming down the bike. It's what I do in my day job. Ben, what does David say?
David says, swimming in pretty much every video game, trying to continuously swim for an extended distance is extremely difficult in the best of situations. Now add in all the non-swim friendly gear a video game character wears, and even the strongest swimmer would be sinking fast.
I like swimly. I really do enjoy swimly as an adjective or an adverb. Yeah, adverb. That's pretty good.
Well, see, he just recently completed a mini triathlon. That's why that is a sensitive subject for him.
Yeah,
good, David.
Congratulations. That's amazing. That's something I could never do. I mean, it's something I would have to work for a very long time to do. And I don't want to do that. But
I'm guessing it's similar to like the GTA 5 triathlon where your thumb just gets really tired after half an hour.
Yeah, then you go to GameStop and you buy a turbo controller, but then you plug it in and Revolver Ocelot comes down and says, like this isn't your game, it's a different studio, and it's a whole big mess. Yeah. So here's my thing. And so swimming in pretty much every game is almost like it's like an inconvenience that's put in, from the lowly Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles dam level all the way up to, you know, GTA or whatever. How would you actually represent that in, you know, like in a video game? Because like video games, they're not physically demanding like, you know, like swimming or any of those kind of things are. And even the most kind of like, I don't know, realistic attempts at doing that are just like button masher Olympic games. Like, how could you actually model the decisions that you make while you're swimming about like pacing and like internal resource management and picking a line and doing all of that stuff?
If you're carrying 50 pounds of ammunition when you jump into a river, you just sink. Like, you drown. That's how you replicate it.
Yeah.
It's like, you drown and your gun is ruined.
Yeah. It just, I don't, again, this gets back to another thing. There's so much I don't know about the act of like doing anything but swimming to fuck around, you know, like, oh, I'm going to swim in the ocean for a little bit. Right. You know, it's like dipshit swimming. Mm-hmm. Like I'm on vacation kind of swimming. Like, I don't know. I'm sure that there's some little core that you could extract from that would actually make a pretty cool game or a pretty cool element, but nothing seems to get beyond just, you know, mashing. Right.
Maybe Red Dead Redemption got it right, where you just drown if you go in the water.
Yeah, games seem to be on this weird, like, polar opposites. It's either super easy and taken for granted, or you touch the water and you die, a la, like, the first Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, well, my favorite thing about the Assassin's Creed, and I think that was even the case up through Assassin's Creed 3, was, like, okay, back, you know, way back then, people who were able to swim were considered to be practitioners of witchcraft. Like, that was not actually a thing anybody really did in those places. And that was the excuse they used to make.
That feels like a rationalization.
Well, of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Matthew say?
Yeah, Matthew says, I've not worked a job that has been represented in games, but I did work on a political campaign a couple of cycles ago, and I'd think an election-themed RTS or Civ-esque turn-based strategy game could be really cool. GOTV or GTFO?
I don't understand.
Yeah, I can see that being out the vote or get the fuck out.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, there you go. I had to think about it a little bit, but given some time to reflect, I got there.
Matthew, Get Democracy. I think Democracy 3 is the one that that just came out. That is not so much about campaigning. That's more about kind of like running an administration and setting policy. But that is that is a very fun game about kind of like statecraft.
There's also a board game called Copycat, which is you're managing an election campaign.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm a little bit bummed out that we're missing the vice presidential debate to record this.
Yeah, I intend to go look it up afterwards.
Yeah, I'm just gonna catch it from the beginning. I want to see that particular shit show. Although it's probably the closest we're going to get to actual policy talk.
Yeah, I was going to say it will be a shit show, but it will be less of a shit show than maybe the other ones are.
I'm sure everybody really doesn't want to hear that, but fuck this.
I was going to say the political discussion klaxons are going off in the background tonight.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. But we've been non-specific enough as to just say fuck this year, and I think we can all agree on that. We can all agree on fuck this year. Paul writes, when I was in college, I drove a forklift in a few jobs. I find the forklift driving in the mobile game Forklifting 2 romanticizes the profession a bit, but is actually pretty fun and pointless, which driving a real forklift can be. The forklift segment in Shenmue wasn't nearly as much fun, and you never get to race them in real life. Well, I mean, you can. You just have to break in after hours.
To YouTube to disprove that.
I can't remember in Shenmue, but if you were to race a forklift in real life, you would need to drive it backwards for sure. I also loaded Walmart trucks by hand in one job, about 5 to 7 a night, and maximizing how much you could stack was a bit like playing Tetris in Hell for 10 to 12 hours every night.
Oof.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun. Not to me.
No, that is wrong. Although I just found a video of VIP Performance modified racing forklift. So, yeah, internet.
I suppose that is true. Like in the forklifts that I've driven, they go faster backward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jella, what does Brian say?
Brian says, I work in a factory and can confirm it is exactly like Factorio.
And the alien bugs come after you if you stand around for too long. If you, if you go to rock a piss, you come back and you're nothing but a skeleton hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, the Hitman series is pretty accurate. I mean, not that I would know.
Then he does that. one of my favorite emotes, which is the flat line smiley face. It's kind of like completely
face
neutral.
Neutral, I believe that is. Yeah.
Jala, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I have a doctorate in theoretical physics, and I can tell you that if I was in the Black Mesa facility, no one would have been able to stop me as I filled out the HR forms relating to multiple breaches of lab safety. Working conditions matter, people. P.S. A student a few weeks ago told me I reminded them of a teacher in Life is Strange. He came up a couple of days later and apologized.
So how do you not spoil the game when you, in response
to that? I think it's ambiguous how it is right now.
Yeah. I mean for him to be like to be faced with that and be like, well, okay. Thanks. Well, what episode you on? That's real important for context.
The immediate question. Chapter 1 or chapter 5?
big difference. Sam writes, every game manages to get driving a car wrong except Deadly Premonition. Well, I mean, Deadly Premonition lets you control both the blinker for no reason and the windshield wipers.
Wait, is there any AI built around the blinker? Like, will other cars let you No.
Go and watch my stream. I'd get into a car. I would turn on the windshield wipers, turn on the right blinker, and then if I drove for long enough, I would switch it to the left blinker.
Like how I drive normally.
Yeah. Gotta keep them on their toes.
Tink, tink, tink. Let's get crazy. Click, tink, tink.
Well, no. Let keep going. Tink.
Yeah. Tink, tink, tink.
Like that's what it is. And occasionally a crazy man talks about movies, and then that's the experience.
We're almost ready for our Deadly Premonition a cappella group.
Oh man.
Deadly Harmonition.
Jala, what does Derek say?
Derek says, my very plain desk job is usually depicted in games as an empty desk in a crumbling building. The most notable traits are the letters of lost love and squandered potential, and the bits of scrap metal the player finds when searching through the drawers. So, fairly accurate, I suppose.
I suppose. Yeah, that's, yeah, I mean, that gets to what my answer will be, but I will leave it. Yeah, it's weird that the most realistic simulation of an office environment is the game Fear.
Or the Stanley Parable.
Yeah. But then again, it's empty, and that is a crazy non-Euclidean building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Chase say?
She says, chopping wood is much, much harder than it looks in games. The most difficult I remember it being is in the Fable games, where it is reduced to a very simple rhythm game. In real life, it requires not only strength, but also much more dexterity than you would think.
And chopping wood is fun.
So it's probably like the same thing in Stardew Valley then.
Oh, but he has a little bit more.
And Chase also says, side note, janitorial work is much easier in real life than it is in Viscera cleanup detail. But then the municipal building I worked in had very few dismembered bodies around.
Yeah, I can't imagine you mop yourself into a corner as frequently as you do in real life as you do in Viscera cleanup detail.
Yeah.
Yeah, so chopping wood, the only chopping wood minigame I can think of is Breath of Fire 3. And that's what you have to do with Bunyan, the woodsman who rescues you at the beginning.
I just think about fishing in Breath of Fire.
God, I love Breath of Fire 3.
Age of Empires, you tell people to chop wood, but you don't actually do it yourself.
Yep. But then you have to listen to it the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just makes you tired hearing it. Dennis, what does Franz say?
He says, you know, being the chosen undead is much more tedious than depicted in Dark Souls. Thanks for clarifying that for us.
Yeah, it looked like a real walk in the park to me. Yeah. The bad thing, nobody sells moisturizer. Yeah. Inevitable hot dogification. So let's speed around these last ones because we have the end in sight. And we're kind of coming up on time. So Jason writes, having worked in retail, I've never dealt with anything like Ash has in the Evil Dead game. No Necronomicon or zombie invasion. Come to think of it, I've never had to use a mower as a last line of defense against a zombie horde when mowing lawns as a kid like you do in Plants vs. Zombies. So I guess I haven't seen a job accurately depicted in a game. You know, I'm sure
you would think looking at Plants vs. Zombies that it is the pinnacle of simulation, but
yeah, I mean, my plants sing to me, but that's just because I don't sleep very much.
You do get a Moograss in No More Heroes.
Yeah, that's true. You can also shake down coconuts. Let us say coconuts. I guess I haven't slept.
Imagine very tasty little flies.
Yeah,
sounds like a new Pokemon.
Yeah.
Oh, Jala, what does Tim say?
Tim says, seeing the way extra lives are given out like candy in Super Mario Galaxy, I can tell you that as a professional extra for film and TV, we are treated with the same box of tissues attitude from the crew and often feel used to death at the end of the day.
Wait a minute. So if the actor stubs their toe, you're just thrown off a cliff? We can't have you around anymore. No.
Next.
Ben, what does Evan say?
Evan says, I built a shed for my dad once. It took a lot longer than it does in Minecraft. On the plus side, no creepers tried to blow it up.
Then he also attached a picture. Evan, that's a damn fine shed.
It is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, this is, it's got electricity, it's got gutters.
Yeah,
there are shutters on the windows.
Oh, there's even landscaping. Like there's a door by the there's a tree by the door. There's a little bush.
There's a birdhouse.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. It's a shed fit for living, my friend.
No, this is a house that happens to keep garden equipment.
Yeah, I mean this. Yeah, his head shears are living the high life. Gustavo writes, Coast Guard, the game, is a bad representation of Coast Guard, the uniform branch service of the United States of America. Yeah. I mean, Cold Fear, right? That's a game where you play as a Coast Guard person. How many outbreaks do you have to deal with on a daily basis?
Are you a Coast Guardian?
Oh, there's literally just a game called Coast Guard.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I was not aware of that. Jella, what does Josh say?
Josh says, as a boxer, I've found the timing involved in Punch-Out to be shockingly spot on. The punch exchanges in the Fight Night series feels too slow.
Huh. I would have considered that to be the other way around.
Well, that's why he said shockingly.
Yeah. Sounds like it's a lot more twitch and a lot less like bullet time reaction there.
In real life, when people get sweaty in the boxing ring, does it look like they have like shrink wrap clinging to them like it does in Fight Night?
Oh, my God. So I'm watching the trailer for this Coast Guard the game. Sorry, going back a question. And it shows you pulling someone out of the water, and the character model is just bone dry. Like you pulled him up over the step. You'd think in a game that centers and happens on the sea and focuses on pulling people out of the sea, there would be some kind of animation to represent people having been in the sea. Continue.
Ben, what does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says, as a scientist who routinely performs genetic works on DNA, I find it funny whenever video games are able to run a sequence and match up DNA immediately. Sure, now we have the tech that speeds it up, but they've been making it seem ultra-trivial for a long time. On that vein, just basically any moment where you have a one-size-fits-all scientist who seems to be an expert in at least six fields of niche science. But again, plot and gameplay concessions, I guess.
Looking at you, Half-Life.
Yeah, it's a scientist with a capital S.
Yeah. Yeah, polymaths, you know. It's not like people need to specialize or anything. It's like a doctor, you know? Yeah. And then let's round everything out here. Dennis, say what Greg says. Greg, the originator of the question.
Yeah, this is a nice little yin and yang end to this. It's very feng shui. He says, as a history major, I've learned to accept that for the sake of the flow of the story and characters and gameplay, that historical events need to be tweaked and changed, much like Hollywood does with movies and authors with books. As long as they don't try to present something as serious when it's not, or hit you over the head with it, or hit you over the head with an error so easy to spot that a sixth grader could do it. One PS game I played claimed the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. Wow. he says, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
He's cool as long as it's not doing that, to be clear.
So. Oh, man. That's pretty funny. The Germans.
Yeah. Having a father-in-law who's very into World War II history does make it hard to watch certain movies. Because you just have stuff constantly pointed out of like, that's not accurate at all.
Nah, those buttons would not have been like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of like that. That's kind of related to my multiplayer answer.
So let's do ours pretty quick here. So for me, like my current job doesn't have an awful lot of analogs, but one of the older jobs that I worked doing like data entry / order entry for a school supply company. And this is going to sound crazy when I say it, but let me just say that really reminded me, or Papers, Please really reminded me of that job. just the whole, like, you're presented with kind of like a smattering of information, and you have to be very, very astute about noticing, like, inconsistencies, about replicating stuff, about kind of like shuffling around, because, like, you know, I would have nightmares about, like, going up and grabbing this fax with this, like, you know, just shitty teacher's handwriting, like, poorly digitized on it, trying to figure out, is that a G or a 6 in the item number, and then just kind of like getting an error report at the end of the day, you know?
Because if you get it wrong, someone is getting a pig fetus that is not expecting it, and you don't want that to happen.
Right. Like, I can't tell you how many owl pellets I just sent out to, like, gym classes and stuff. So yeah, it just, I would say, like, that at least mechanically gets at the menial nature of, like, you know, data and order entry kind of stuff, I would say. Jala, I want to hear yours.
Well, insofar as my own personal experiences, about the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is that in the apartment, a separated place demo, there is a good representation of how life gets in the way of the pursuit of specifically painting, and also about the personal motivations of a comic book artist. However, when it comes to other stuff that related to the earlier commentary, my ex was in the Navy and served on a submarine. So he was also a big military history buff overall. So we would go to a lot of different, you know, historical monuments or museums or what have you. And we would also chat about whatever either of us was reading. I like history as well, not so specifically, you know, just in that one particular field. So, like, you know, overall, we would just talk about these things. Well, when playing Resident Evil 6, we had such a good time laughing about, specifically, like, probably the funniest thing was Ada's impossible submarine in the first chapter of her campaign, that it literally, you know, we just called it the improbable submarine, actually, because it's so ridiculously roomy and has all these areas that are just not part and parcel of a real sub, and there's just no way that any of this makes any damn sense.
It's a luxury,
you know,
sub.
And yeah, sure.
Like,
so
it has
anyway,
a front porch.
But well, yeah, well, I mean, like, it even says in the news report in the game that this was like a U.S. sub that was, you know, hijacked. And I'm just like, okay. And so we were just laughing about, you know, all the details, specifically of that part. I mean, that was the thing that just was the most hilarious to us. So.
Oh, man. Well, at least you got some kind of enjoyment out of the Ada section of that game.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just looking at the thing and going, LOL, that's hilarious. And then, God, this is irritating to play.
Ben, how about you?
I think I'm going to piggyback on your answer, Cole. At one point in time, I worked at a desk staff in college where I'd have to check people's IDs to let them in a building, a dorm room. And so not as much like the detail-oriented part, but like the emotional part of being like, nah, you can't go in, dude.
I'm sorry, you can't see your friends or your family. Yeah,
but I'm trying to drink tonight. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
I get it.
You're going to have to go back out to college campus.
I get it, but we all have jobs.
Yeah.
God, I hate it when I have to explain that to people.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but we all have jobs. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, so not a lot out there for generic business person. So I guess the post-apocalyptic desk anecdote fits pretty well. I do remember in college, as part of a business class, there was like a very well-developed like business simulation that you would run, effectively a video game, and you would be playing against different teams within the class. And so it was all about, you know, what changes were you making to your product and how are you managing your inventory and what marketing levels were you running and all this different stuff, which did a fairly good job replicating, you know, like real life business, except there was infinitely more shit talking in the college classroom version. Like there were some heated rivalries. And when you get to check in with people every day in class to like say, you know, aha, I'm still ahead of you. And like people's feelings got hurt. It was intense. Whereas, you know, everyone's concerned about being professional in the business world. So can't quite do that. Can't call up the competitor and be like, you suck.
I knew you were going to do that, so I did this, and now I'm still in the lead.
We won that one, so I can talk about it with a smile on my face.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
There were some scars left, so.
Huh. So, yeah, that's an actual game those developed. Neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Greg, for recommending that question. And thank you, folks, for answering that as well. We always appreciate it. If you want to check these out in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and, watch for those prompts to go up on Tuesday afternoons. I appreciate both Dennis and Jala, both of you, for doing that.
No
problem.
Let's go on to the next segment.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period or of time or so. Dennis, I believe you were away the last time that we recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I've been out for a minute.
Yes, you have. So I'm going to ask you to lead us here.
Sure. I don't think I'll disappoint. I got a lot on my plate.
Not into temptation.
Of course. I mean, just kind of like just to start off the proceedings, but talk about the games you've been playing.
Yeah. Well, the temptation could be fun. Maybe we'll get to that later. Yeah, no.
So, you can't delay temptation. go ahead.
We'll see. The new stuff that I've played, I tried Towerfall Ascension for the first time, which is a little kind of 2D arena combat game. You play it co-op or versus. I stuck exclusively to co-op. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you basically are these kind of pixel art sprites in a static screen arena. So the entire game is played, you know, on one screen. The camera doesn't pan left or right or anything.
This is like pixelated Smash Brothers, but with archery controls.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. And you're just fighting through waves of energies, enemies, trying to survive long enough to get to the end. And it's really kind of quick and twitchy. It's a lot of fun. There is friendly fire, which can lead to some really interesting moments. Just, you know, both trying your best to take out an enemy and you wind up taking out each other instead and that sort of stuff. Your arrows also, you have like three when you start and you fire it and it sticks into whatever it hits. So you have to then go retrieve your arrows if you want to continue using them.
Can you pick up other people's arrows?
You can. So one person can end up with all the arrows, but you're able to trade them back in just the most natural way, which is by jumping on someone's head to steal their arrows. just how it works in real life. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the game is super fast and twitchy. The coolest thing, though, and I've only seen this happen in one of the levels so far. I imagine it happens at more points in the game. But like the final wave of enemies is just packed with a ton of people on screen at once. But everything kind of slows down a measure and goes bullet time on you. And suddenly, whereas you were just like, you know, kind of doing everything by reflex before, you have to kind of consider your trajectory and you can aim your shots and you can kind of combo bouncing off of one enemy to pop you up so you can shoot another and then falling across to a third. And that makes you feel so freaking badass. like the first time it happened, I was playing with a friend, not Jen in this instance, but another friend. And we were just both like, oh shit, like this is awesome.
it's like a late game Yoshi's Island trick shot.
Yeah, like I wish I had like sunglasses I could have put on. It was just felt like a complete badass. So that was the highlight of playing it. We only did a couple levels together, but just that feeling of kind of going into the final stage, they're throwing everything that it's got at you, and you kind of slow down and are able to do a bunch of super cool, sweet moves that you would be very. I mean, you theoretically could do all this stuff running at normal speed. It would just be nearly impossible.
Right.
Because the need for Twitch. I'd actually be interested to try one of those final waves without the slowdown, just to see if it's even remotely possible to get through.
Yeah.
Or just how difficult it would be in comparison.
Is that like a mutator you can put on?
I don't know. I didn't explore in the menu systems for it. And we didn't do anything to trigger it other than reach the final wave of a certain area.
Right.
So I mean, it was a surprise when it happened, and I'll be interested to see if it continues throughout the rest of the game. The other new thing, or at least new to me, that I've been playing is Dark Souls 2 DLC.
Oh shit! Yeah.
I finally have
the crowns.
Yeah, I've finally gotten far. Yes, the crowns.
We almost made it an episode without talking about it.
Yeah. That's never going to happen.
Our chances were so good with the multiplayer. There's no way someone could shoehorn in Dark Souls with it.
Oh, you're right. We did get through the multiplayer.
No, they did.
Oh, yeah. We totally had the Chosen Undead. Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, who's that? that was, Franz kindling the flame there. I'm... The weird thing is that since I have Scholar of the First Sin, and so I got all the DLCs at once, I don't really know which one is which, so I went to whatever one is behind the Rotten.
Oh, first. That's the first one that came out. Do you want to know the order that they came out? Or
I think it's the one behind the Rotten, the one, what is it, behind the Duke's Dear Freya is the next one?
No, it's not Freya, it's the old Iron King.
There you go, old Iron King, yep. So yep. I think it's Rotten, Old Iron King, and then On Your Way to the Castle.
Right. Except you have to, because you didn't buy the DLC, you have to find the items that unlock those shrines in the world.
Yeah. I Wikipedia'd it.
Yeah.
To get those keys, make sure I had them.
Yeah, no, so you went to like what is categorically one of the best ones, like the sunken Shulva is great.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's fantastic. And just like it had been a long time since I played Dark Souls 2, so I felt a little bit like I thought I was coming to it fresh. But just going into a truly new area that I didn't know the path through already is an incredible feeling, and one that I hadn't realized that I'd been missing, even though I was playing Dark Souls again.
And that is it's a distinct departure from like Dark Souls 2, like level design too. It's almost like walking into a Dark Souls 1 level, kind of.
Yes, in the best possible way. Like that is high praise. Yep. So that was really enjoyable, and just that feeling of like I'm at a crossroads, and I don't know which way is right. And I kind of don't want to go either because I know there's bad stuff down both. And I don't know where the bonfires are. And I'm almost out of spells. And you guys, like, so it's a great feeling of intimidation that I haven't, like, going back to the game, even though it's been a while since I've played it, was really just the muscle memory was there for me. And, like, I was familiar with all the areas. I felt very comfortable running past stuff that I didn't want to deal with and all that stuff. So that feeling of intimidation is nice to have back.
Yeah.
Have not beaten the area yet. I'm currently trying to figure out how to get past the ghost guys, and I think I've got an idea of how. But they are pains in the asses, let me tell you.
I just about told you how to do it, but I'm not going to do it.
let's say this: I know how to do it with the first two. You see, mm-hmm. I don't know where this game's been out forever. I don't know where the crypt is or the sepulcher is for the third guy.
The altar. Yeah, that's
Upon thinking about it, it might be the path to the right before I get to him, but I don't know.
You know we'll the secret. That is intentionally like them just kind of like fucking with you.
Well, and the best part is so for anyone who hasn't played it, the secret is that you have to. There are these ghosts that are almost impossible to kill, and they do a bunch of damage. You have to go find where their like bodies are laid to rest and destroy the bodies, and then that turns them human, essentially, or undead, or physical, and then you can fight them more fairly. As I was, running up to the first area, the soapstone message was weakness bloodstain, and like that was just enough to have me make the connection and be like, I see, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
So that kind of cryptic messaging system worked well for me in that instance.
Yeah. No, it's really good.
So that's the DLC. I'm thick in the middle of playing it, and I look forward to all three of them.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing you get to that boss, because I really don't like that boss. the first one that you find, the second one, the second mandatory one is really good. But
okay. Cool.
No. Yeah. All of those DLCs are really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard that, and that actually got me to choose to go back and play this again versus going straight into Bloodborne. So, got a lot of good input on it, and I feel like it's paying off right now. So that's nice. That's good. I've got a couple of co-op shout-outs as well.
Okay, go for it.
I started started playing Divinity Original Sin again, actually last night as of this recording, with Evan B. And I did like a little bit of it with Money Smith, but we didn't get far at all. And then he kind of went off to coding boot camp. So it's nice to actually start that in earnest. And man, is that fun. Especially where, you know, he's playing kind of a more pragmatic character, and I'm playing more kind of off the cuff. Romantic is the wrong word, but, you know, he is the Skywalker and I am the Solo, as it were. but we had our first encounter where you kind of disagree on what to do, and that the dialogue system supports that. Like, and then there's a rock, paper, scissors game to see who gets their way. And I think the way it works is it does like opposed checks based on like the stat that you are using to try to get your way. So like I tried using charm, he tried using like reason, and I guess we were the same in those stats. If one of us had been stronger in their respective stat, they would have gotten their way. But then if it's a tie, you go to like a rock, paper, scissors mini game, which is entertaining. So that was cool to see it play out. It was also cool to see the game facilitate our various shenanigans. So early on, you come to a bridge that's being guarded by two drunk soldiers, and you have to kind of talk your way through it. Well, I'm playing a sneaky guy, so I went invisible and was just kind of like exploring around behind them. I snuck past them. Was like, I got passed, and Evan was like, well, I can't do that. Let me talk to him real quick. I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to play around over here. Clicked on a box unthinkingly while I was invisible, and that turned me visible, and all of a sudden the guards were like freaking out, and so we wound up having to kill them. Oops. which is really funny, though, because then we get to the next encounter, and there's this big battle that was happening on the beach behind the bridge, and you kind of close up that battle and finish that out. And then the captain is like, you know, it's really funny. We had two more soldiers. I thought they would have heard the screams and like come to help us. And we're both like, yeah, it's so weird. We're out of here. Bye. Like, running away from that exchange as fast as possible. Yeah. But it really felt like it wasn't that, hey, in the developer's mind, they wanted you to talk through it. And if you didn't talk through it, then they just kind of, it wasn't something they thought through. It felt like they had really fully fleshed out all of the different options. So appreciate that. The one downside of playing the game co-op is after that kind of combat sequence, you get into a large town and you spend a lot of time talking to people and solving puzzles and you know, doing non-combat stuff with a lot of dialogue. And I think both of us, just because we're playing with another person, well, I don't want to comment on Evan's play style. I know I would kind of traditionally kind of sit down and probably listen to a lot of the dialogue and read everything really thoroughly.
That's so hard to do in multiplayer, though.
That's not what you're there for, even though it's so rich and like I know the game is really good for that. I found myself kind of clicking ahead just because I wanted to get to doing something with the person I was playing with. And that it doesn't feel like you're doing that when you're both just reading the same piece of parchment.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So we'll like, see if that has negative effects, because there's a mystery in the town that we're trying to solve. So yeah, if we're not paying enough attention, we'll see if that comes back to bite us. It's a ton of fun to play with a friend.
Yeah, that just sounds like such a tension, because like not a tension, but like a tension, you know, between know the fun anecdotes of just the way that your two different styles interact. You know, and the way that the mechanics and the dialogue interact as well, like that just sounds so unique and like something that can't really be captured elsewhere, right? But then also the fact that like this is a kind of game that I could never see subjecting somebody else to. I couldn't see subjecting somebody else to the way that I play this kind of game.
So like you're pixel hunting, essentially.
Yeah. Or just kind of like, you know, like me going back and just kind of like, I'll read the entire note and then go back and skim it again for like details that make more sense now that I know the entire thing, you know, just bunch of stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, it is. It does feel weird. And it's really funny because you'll read a book and then you have the opportunity to talk to your partner about what you just read. Mm-hmm. Or you talk to an NPC that's like a windbag. And you then turn and talk to your, you know, partner, and that actually plays into the quest. And so there's this moment of like click, yeah, click, skim, click, yeah. Okay. Oh wait, oh, I have to say something meaningful about this. Like, oh shit, I got to go back and read for comprehension now. Like, whoops. So that's a lot of fun. And the combat is just superb. I think that same the thing that is a tension when you're reading co-op, that kind of feeling like you need to get on with things, is actually really positive in the combat of the game, because it's a turn-based game ultimately. And where if I was in control of both the characters, I would probably sit and overanalyze and try to plan every little thing out and take forever. Playing with a friend is more of just kind of a fly by the seat of your pants, and it's like, well, I'll try going over here and fire this arrow. And I haven't thought through all the potential implications of that, but mm-hmm. we're, you know, having a side conversation and, you know, we're playing on the normal difficulty. So like it's not going to be that bad.
Yeah.
And that tends to move the combat along in really interesting ways, because you do make mistakes and then you have to play around those mistakes. And I think that actually makes the game more fun. So, maybe, you know, not worrying about being perfect the first time is a good, or, you know, not paying too much attention is good in that scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a Divinity Original Sin and I'm quite enjoying it.
Nice.
Final one, which I've talked about before on the show, so I'll keep it short, is Rocket League, which I've played more of, and I got into doubles Rocket League. Previously, I had been doing either single one-on-one duels, or I had been doing like triple person, like full teams. And my rationale behind that was like, I either want it to all be on my shoulders and no one's getting hurt but me when I screw up, or I want the team to be big enough that it's kind of chaotic and I don't have to feel bad about screwing up because everyone's just careening around and running into each other.
Right, you just disappear.
Yeah. It disappeared into the craziness. But I got together with Lance and played with him doubles, and that is the sweet spot for the game. I'm so glad he kind of dragged me into it, because that is so much fun, and it's just like the right amount of people on the field, the right amount of like interaction and strategy and thinking and all that stuff. Like that to me feels like where Rocket League really, really shines. So Ben, I'd be curious, what format do you usually play?
Depends on the number of people who want to play, but if there's two people, we play doubles. If there's three people, we play triples. So that's usually how it goes. If there's four people, we usually would rather break into two doubles than do chaos. Mm-hmm. So
sure. Now, if you're just queuing by yourself, do you do all duels? Or sorry, and the duels is confusing. Do you do all one versus one, or will you queue in with a rando?
Typically, I won't play a whole lot if I'm by myself, but if I do, I might try one-on-one a couple of times, but I feel like it's super stressful, so I can only do a couple rounds of it, because it's like, it's completely on you, and so like, if you're playing someone who's really good, yeah, I find it a very like stressful experience, so I only do, yeah, that's okay, but I do single standard sometimes, because that's a little bit more balanced, and then I'll also play Rumble by myself, because that's like the more like fun, chaotic sort of thing. So it's not as serious. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So when you do doubles, do you have one person like stay back and one person be more of an aggressor?
I think the communication, it's very fluid. So usually one of us will fill that role, but then it's very fluid just on the state of the field. And it feels, it's got the feel of being a fighter pilot almost. So, you know, you watch the movies like Independence Day and stuff, where it's like the super intense, or Top Gun, super intense air combat. And they're like calling out to each other, he's behind me, go left. And you're like, roll right. And, you know, I'm coming up behind you. And like there's just this constant like shouting into a microphone what you're doing. and that translates very directly to what you're doing in Rocket League, communicating with your teammate. So, you know, you start up and you realize that you're both in position to go for the ball. So it's like, you, I'll go back to the goal. And then, you know, the shot goes one way and you're like, okay, I'm back in the goal. You take it out. Okay. You got a good hit. I'm coming out to you. I'm following you on the left. You got a clear shot. No one's behind. Wait, guys coming up on the right. And like, we're just constantly doing those call outs back and forth to each other. It just makes it feel that much more intense. It's a really good feeling when you actually feel like you are able to meaningfully, sync up. Because the game is so much built around the chaos of being hard to control and unwieldy, and so when you do feel like you're partnering well, it's that much better.
Yeah, you're doing your own running commentary.
So yeah, effectively,
Have you played Rumble yet? Have you taken the plunge into that?
No, I've played Hoops, and that was fantastic. I haven't played Rumble.
Okay, Hoops, what did you think of Hoops?
Earlier, it's Loved it. So hoops is a smaller court, and it's baskets instead of goals. So it's a basketball equivalent, and basically forces you to try to do aerials and hit the ball while you're flying, because otherwise mm-hmm. you'll never really be able to get it into the goal, or at mm-hmm. least not nearly as well. And that pushed me way outside my comfort zone, but I felt like I elevated my game because of it. Mm-hmm. And it was new to Lance as well, even though he's way more experienced than me. But we were both just having a blast kind of learning the new ropes.
Mm-hmm. Have you done Snow Day yet?
No, I haven't.
I think you're just making stuff up.
I swear, no, they're really good at it. They just make new modes like every couple months. But
have you tried Rimshot? I assume you've tried Rimshot, right? What about Dark Alley? You've done Dark Alley, right?
Yeah, I've heard really good stuff about Wingspan.
Yeah. It kind of has gotten less of a player base since History came out.
That's hard to compete with that, especially with how well considered it is.
You just write on top of an open textbook, mm-hmm. read it as you drive by it.
No, there's a new one called Flingus, which I think is going to be really good. I mean, this can just be the rest of the show if you want. Like,
how long you guys got?
I don't know. I'm not bringing any material to this.
But Snow Day, what's Snow Day?
Snow Day is like a hockey variant of it, where you have a giant puck instead of a ball.
I like that mode.
I like it a lot too. Like the key aspect of it is like you want to send it along the walls, because if it goes over, if it crosses the goal, it naturally like has like suction against like the surface it's on, so it'll just like fall into the goal. So both like defense and offense, you have to be more conscious of riding on the walls. So it's kind of interesting.
That sounds like fun.
So that's good times. Yeah. That's me. So hopefully, I know that's not much, but hopefully that's a meager contribution for this week.
Yeah, it's a shitload of video games, Dennis.
three weeks worth of video games built up there. That's a backlog if I ever saw one.
Holy hell, it is. Jala, I'm curious what you've been playing.
Okay, well, first things first, I have my usual co-op corner. I was streaming Resident Evil 6 with Sam. I finished the rest of Ada's campaign, and we also started Jake and Sherry Chapter 1. So we are finally on the last segment of the game, and we got 4 more chapters to go, and then we are done with Resident Evil 6. Hmm. And I don't know if we're going to loop back down to Resident Evil 5 and do the DLC, because we didn't do it because we were so frustrated. I don't know if we can go back to that and still manage to play it after having played 6, because 6 has better controls and everything. But we'll see.
Am I realizing that like by going back to 4 for Watch Out for Fireballs?
Yeah. It's real hard. Like, I went back and tried to play 4 after I played 6, and it was hard to do. Yeah. Like, you can get you reacclimate to it, but it's just like, man, this would have been so much easier, or not easier, but like so much better if, you know, it controlled more like this. You know, like, I like the way the controls worked, you know, in 6. So.
And there's so much about 4 that probably wouldn't work if you were as nimble as you were in 6.
Yeah,
but even true. Still, like, to reacclimate to what the game wants the pacing of it to be is hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so then I also played Magicka in Team Fortress 2 with James Robinson. I have not been able to play with
Magicka.
Him.
I'm curious.
Oh, you haven't played Magicka before? I've mentioned it off and on like before. It has friendly fire as well. It is and that's the first thing you need to know about Magicka. The second thing you need to know about Magicka is for a very long time you won't know how the hell to do magic, so you're just going to be blowing each other up constantly. It is a very silly game where everybody's a wizard, and I don't even remember what the whole plot is. I think you have to go take down some evil bad guy, and that's the plot. I mean, like, I don't even think they care too much about that, because it's pretty humorous, pretty cute, but and it has its own version of like Simlish. It is actually based in tidbits of languages, from what I can discern. Like, I don't think it is a straight up language. I think it's more like a mixture of various languages from Europe, but anyway, Magicka is fun. You can play it with up to 4 people, and James and I had tried to play it at some point or other previously, but we didn't get very far into it, or he had tried to play it on his own and didn't get very far into it. I've never beaten that game. And the reason why is because, like, somebody will play it with me and then we'll get going, and then just somehow it just, like, peters out and we just don't end up finishing the game. Yeah. You know, like, we move on to something else and then we just never finish. It's not that the game doesn't play well. You know, it does. Once you get the hang of it, especially, then it's a lot of fun. It's just, I don't know, we just stop playing. So if anybody wants to finish playing Magicka with me, I would like to see the end of the game finally, because I played the beginning like a million times. I would like to move on past chapter 1 and 2. So anyway, that's a thing. Yeah. Other than that, I also played a lot of the old PS1 game Azure Dreams, and the reason why is because, as I mentioned the last time we recorded, I guest hosted on the PlayStation Power podcast from theboxfort.net, and I was on there talking specifically about Azure Dreams. So although I've played this game for a very, very long time, I felt like I should go back in and, you know, do a refresher and actually see what the hell I was last doing in the game. So, you know, I was playing around a little bit in there. It's an early PS1 game. For anybody who doesn't know what this game is, it was originally released both on Game Boy Color and then on PlayStation. But the mechanics on the Game Boy Color version are understandably simpler and less interesting, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, they take out a lot of the elements that make the game fun. It's a roguelike dungeon crawler with an equal portion of town development segments and romance quests. So, there's a lot of different things going on in the game at the same time. So it's kind of, it's interesting because not a lot of games ended up doing that. Like, they ended up, you know, being roguelike dungeon crawlers or town development or, you know, romance games or town development with romance games and then, you know, whatever, but not like this particular combination of things.
Yeah.
It's one of my absolute favorite games that I end up playing very frequently. I go back to, on my PlayStation 1, I go back to certain games quite a bit. Azure Dreams, Digimon Card Battle, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. These are three that I play, and only one of those is super popular. So, yeah, if you want to listen to that, it's on theboxfort.net. It was episode number, I believe, 14, and it's just called Azure Dreams. And yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it's me talking with Greg, who gave us the multiplayer question for this week, mm-hmm. and George. So yeah.
Yeah. So here's my brief question about Azure Dreams, yeah. and the romance stuff. So there's romance to what end? Like, does that have any effect on the other systems in the game, or is that more of just like a diversion?
Oh, no, it's, basically that's a thing that we had a long discussion about in the, podcast, because, we were talking about the pros and cons of what this game did. And then of course, like, what came out after this. And, for example, Greg was, you know, like, well, I've played other roguelike dungeon crawlers that I like the way that plays better, because, you know, other roguelike dungeon crawlers that have come since this have bosses and mini bosses and this and that, and Azure Dreams doesn't. And then he's like, well, the town development, you can only do these things, the romance thing, you can only do these. And one thing that I pointed out was exactly that the town and romance parts don't have any bearing whatsoever on what happens in the tower. Now, what happens in the tower, like, as you ascend levels and things like that, you know, changes how the townspeople view you. Like, when you get back from the tower after having gotten to a certain point, like, they have a different level of esteem for you and things. I don't mm-hmm. know if that's related to, like, how far you go or just what level, you know, your familiars have gotten to or whatever, but
yeah.
So anyway, yeah, like, that's one of the things that I had pointed out, was the fact that those things are completely separate. However, if it was just like the dungeon crawling aspect itself, where you're just going in the dungeon over and over again, and then you wipe and then you have to go back in without some kind of break, then it would be too monotonous for me to care about it very much. The fact that you can wander around town and build buildings and talk to everybody and they all have different reactions to you now, and you can go off and try to pimp on like 8 ladies, you know, like, that's gives you something to do that's just kind of like decompressing from being in the tower fighting all the monsters and, you know, not knowing what the hell's going to happen because it's a roguelike. So I like the fact that it has those elements, but at the same time, like, I don't know if they necessarily need to add more detail to them or not, because if the town development and the romance quest stuff started getting too complicated and started affecting too many things inside the tower, then they wouldn't be diversions from all the stress you just dealt with in the tower. They would now become new chores. So it would just be kind of like a big slog of all these different moving parts, you know? So I actually, I think my final conclusion about that was that I kind of like it being simpler, just because it is just, you know, faffing around, you know, before you go back into the tower again, you know, before you're ready to,
that
jump
was
back in.
Faffing
yes.
around.
Faffing.
So, I mean, it stands in contrast to something, which gives it a little more meaning.
Yeah. So, yeah, but my equipment, I had on my save file I had loaded up was a 60-hour save file, and I had just switched over to using a training wand because it's the only weapon you can use that does not rust that you can improve with, you know, magic items. Like, you can improve the hit rate on it. So it was a training wand +8 and my diamond shield +43. I played a little bit of the game.
Yeah. Just a stitch.
It's remarkable that you still have your save file around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I still have all my memory cards and stuff because I still have my PS2. So... yeah, and then anything else about Azure Dreams before I go on to the last thing I played?
No. I would encourage people to go to listen to that for more detailed discussion.
Yeah, it's also very funny because you get to hear me talking to other people and you know, BSing around. There's involvement of cartwheeling onto a Segway, which won't make any damn sense unless you go listen to that episode. I also made, like, this crazy little image of the Jala Segway. Which won't make any sense. But yeah, you can go look at that. That's on my Twitter and my Instagram, and I posted it in Slack. So it's in places. But anyway, so yeah, the last thing I played or am playing, continue to play, is Steins Gate. I'm still playing it.
Okay.
It got a little bit better, but Daru is such a perv that, and because I've recently been sexually harassed on the net, it just kind of creates anxiety for me.
Yeah,
so,
that's not acceptable. Yeah,
I've been sharing some of the examples of the crap he pops up with on my Twitter and also in Slack. So, you know, like, some of the listeners are just like waiting for me to flip a table about this. It hasn't gotten to that point at any point yet where, you know, and I don't think it will, where I just want to flip a table. I'm frustrated. It brings up unhappy emotions sometimes with some of the crap that, you know, gets said, but once that seems to be petering out a little bit, like, there's not so much of that going on, just as you had said, Cole, like, it starts to, I mean, it doesn't go away entirely, but it's not the main focus of everything that Daru does, you know?
Right. I didn't know the context for your, I thought you were just saying, like, oh, this is really goofy and, you know, like, I wish they didn't do this. I thought that was your objection, not, you know, like, recent experiences kind of sucked and this reminds me, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, it brings up bad things. So that's not fun. But it's not uncomfortable enough of a thing that, like, I've stopped playing it or anything like that. It's just kind of like, oh, frowny face. It may be a little bit of a queasy feeling in my stomach, but then I move on. So I finished chapters 1 and 2, and I believe your way of describing it, Cole, was glacial pacing. No fucking kidding. Oh my God. damn, like, jeez. I was just like, can somebody just move on with something? Like, I don't need this exposition about why this works. Like, you don't have to sell me why time travel works. You have a fucking cell phone attached to a microwave, and you're telling me that's what's making it happen, and that's what's making it go. If I'm buying that, you do not need to go into detail about, you know, like, stuff that's based in quantum physics and whatever, but then, like, also spins off into whatever the author thinks, like, that was like such a slog, and I'm just like, can you just stop now? Like, I understand that this is interesting to you. What it felt like is this is something that is interesting to the author, and therefore they're just like, look at this thing that I really like, isn't it excited? And, like, you know, meanwhile you're over here, like, you know, falling asleep and still going on.
We call that 999 syndrome.
Although in 999 most of it, like, I didn't have that problem.
Yeah.
It was VLR that made me want to do flip tables about that. But interestingly, I haven't necessarily wanted to flip tables about anything in Steins Gate. Like, it just hasn't triggered that frustration. I think because, like, they usually wrap it up a lot faster than VLR has. So anyway, another random note about this that is just like an amusing thing, at least to me, is the name of whoever it is, you know, the person that is talking to you in the talk bubble, changes. Like, when you first run into this one character, it says, probably not organization spy. And then lady ignoring me, lady who apologized out of nowhere, lady ignoring me and apparently sightseeing in Akihabara, strange lady apparently sightseeing in Akihabara. And, like, the name would just keep changing and evolving as you talk to this person and come to conclusions about them. Like, the way that they are labeled changes. And that was actually really entertaining to me. So... And the main character is starting to get to the point where, like, he's a little bit more tolerable. Like, he's not making me want to, you know, stab him in the eye or anything. That's good.
Okabe definitely starts in a deficit for charm, but he covers a lot of ground with that. And just the whole naming people thing, like that is entirely within his character, and I love that is kind of like referenced in the interface, because, like, you know, even major characters, like, when he decides that he's going to call Karisu Christina, like, there we go. All of a sudden, she's Christina now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's an entertaining thing for me, is just to watch how the names change over time, just whenever he decides that he's going to relabel them, however it is he relabels them. And, like, he also... you know, keeps on correcting people anytime they talk about, you know, the microwave with the phone on it that's called a phone wave. Everybody just calls it the phone wave, and he's like, no, it's phone wave subject to change, name subject to change. And he just keeps on correcting them every single time they say just phone wave.
Yeah.
He's like, no. And then every single time he says it in his little narrative bits, it's got, you know, phone wave, name subject to change.
Yep. So, and it even goes down to, like, there's a, you know, he's a hypocrite, because if people don't call him by what's his name, Huin something or other, like, by his chosen, like, supervillain name, he gets really cranky, but he never calls anybody by their actual name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then also, I'm glad to say that Bubblehead, the bubble-headed girl, is not really making much, you know, impact. She just kind of, like, floated off somewhere, which is good. Like, I don't want her to be in the main spotlight, because she drives me nuts. At least she drove me nuts more in the beginning. She's not as bad now either. Like, all of the characters are getting less annoying over time, which is good.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. Like, I just went through the part where Daru is talking about cracking into CERN and, like, you know, relating that to boobies and, you know, seeing naughty bits and whatever. And so, like, that's the last bit I remember from it. Although I know I got past that part. I don't know what they're doing now. I think they're just sitting around in the lab talking again.
Yeah.
So I don't remember what they're talking about now, but eventually something will happen, I'm sure.
Yep.
It's how many hours is this game?
I have no idea. There's no hours played on PS on PlayStation, like, at a system level. So I don't know. Like, it was, you know, it was like 2 weeks of play for me, you know, in, you know, playing a couple hours a night.
What are you guys playing it on?
Vita.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't play that much at a time because I don't have that much time to play a game in one sitting.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I just play in snippets as I can, which is part of the reason why I don't retain everything about where I was last. But
So this is
how many chapters is it? You can answer that much, right?
Ah, fuck! I really don't know. I think it's
you don't know. Okay.
Yeah, it's more than you would think given where you're at, but the chapters really speed up. Because there's far more incident after things are set up and after the after they kind of figure out the really novel way that they operate time travel in this.
Well, I remember they were talking about you know, micro black holes and how the hell could they have it in this time travel machine, and you know, this is all the instances of the people traveling in time, and this is, you know, like the evidence of that and whatever. Yeah. And that's the last stuff they were talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, when stuff starts actually like happening, then I'll be excited. But
yeah, it's not just glacially paced at the front. Like when action starts happening, it starts happening very quickly. And like just after you pass that threshold, it's going to be like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like there is actual like no sense of pacing in the game version.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That sounds exciting. But at least like when stuff starts moving, then I won't be bored with it anymore, because like it's not that I'm necessarily bored, but I'm just like, you can stop explaining, you can stop trying to convince me now. It's all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Well, I'm happy you're sticking with it and that it's getting better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like it's not making me mad. That's the important thing. That's the takeaway. I'm not mad at the game. And I actually, you know, like, there's that one girl with the, I don't know, the bright yellow eyes who works downstairs, and she entertains me.
Oh, the cat girl?
She's a cat girl?
Is she the bright? Oh, no.
No.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a different person.
The one who works.
A character that I don't really like. The strange foreigner woman.
Yeah. I guess. The one that repairs the CRTVs.
Yep. I forget her name. I like that character as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that all, Jala?
That is it.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
It'll be pretty easy. I've been playing Mad Max and I've been playing Rocket League.
So give me the Mad Max update.
Okay. So, I can't remember the last time I talked about Mad Max. I don't know if I mentioned this last time or not, but I cleared one of the areas. So, there's like five different regions. So, I completed one of the regions. So, it's completely like devoid of threat or anything like that.
I thought you were going to say life.
Tell me it's Mad Max.
That too, a little bit. So it was kind of interesting. They do have like kind of like a base upgrade mechanic in each of the regions. So I got to see that to its fruition. But then after that, I mean, it was kind of okay, but I don't think I'm really putting as high of a priority to try and do that in every region. I'm kind of doing it as I go through it, but I'm, trying to follow the story missions a little bit closely now. I don't know how far I am in the game. I think I've sunk about 40 hours into it or so. I've gotten to all the places. I know one of the things that I mentioned before, and again, hopefully it's not too much of a spoiler since it occurs in the first 5 minutes, but...
I think you are probably the only person who would think that was...
Yeah. In the opening cutscene, you kill the main bad guy of this entire...
Oh, yeah, you talked about that last time.
Yeah, so... The one thing it kind of suffers from is there's no, like, endgame boss that you're kind of going for. At least, like, there's side bosses and there's, like, kind of secondary things that you're going for, I guess. But it kind of takes the punch out of it a little bit because there's not, you know, the world is kind of devoid of a leader right now. So unless they kind of build up those narrative threads and make, like, a new boss out of nothing, it's just one thing that's just kind of funny about the design choice. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, upgrade system's pretty cool. There's a lot of upgrades you can put to the car that you drive. So the driving mechanic is interesting. It's not like GTA. There's like kind of some rails on it where like you can't flip the car over. Like it'll automatically write itself. So there's like certain kind of boundaries that you operate within. But that said, I mean, the world is still gorgeous. Like driving around parts of the world, like everything is just really beautifully post-apocalyptic. So that's really cool to explore still. I don't know if I mentioned this one or not too, but there's no boundaries on the map. You can just keep driving off in the distance. It's just the idea is that there's nothing there.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I think it eventually ends. Like if you scroll over far enough, it eventually like ends. But I thought that was a really cool design choice too, to not like give you these invisible walls. So yeah. Yeah, still a cool game. I'll probably try and finish the main story, but I don't know how much I'll do after that. But yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, that sounds like it has continued to be a really fun surprise. So last time you forgot to mention it on the air, but this has Batman combat.
Yeah. I did forget to mention that. Yeah, they have the two-button combat system that, the same way as Batman. And then they also, like, similar to Batman, there's a lot of, like, moves you can unlock as you progress through the game. So, like, different, like, finishing combos or, like, different, like, upgrade abilities. So, like, you can do it unlocks new things where it's, like, say if somebody's attacking you with a shiv, you can unlock the ability to, like, reverse it and take the shiv away from them and then stab someone else or something like that. So, the combat gets more and more, I guess, easier, but then also fun as the game goes on. So that's pretty cool.
Well, I imagine once you unlock the Shiv Master, you've got someone coming at you with the sword, and they kind of up the ante progressively.
It hasn't been too bad. It's not as bad as that. It's not like a treadmill that you're where you're running in place or anything. one cool thing is you can upgrade your knuckle dusters, like. So eventually you get these, like, I don't know, like screw gloves almost that you punch people with, which is seems pretty brutal, but doesn't really have an effect. It just increases the damage you give out. So it's just changing numbers. But it's still a really cool game. It's definitely a beautiful experience, if nothing else. So it's well worth $10 to check out if it ever goes on sale again. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool. A resounding endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I never ask anybody else this, but I want to ask you, just because I know you're very deliberate about the way you approach these things. What are you doing next?
The next game? Right now, there's nothing on my horizon. I don't know of any major releases coming out that I should be aware of. I haven't looked anything up recently, I guess. So I'm basically just polishing off my Max for the time being, and then I'll see what else I have. I think I have a backlog of a couple different games that I've kind of picked up halfway and that I need to go back and complete, but I don't remember what all of them are off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, for example, like Final Fantasy, I think will be cool when that comes out. I might pick that up.
Yeah.
The Last Guardian, if and when that ever comes out, I will probably play. So, I mean, there's things around the corner. I just haven't, they're not really on the forefront of my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cole, the reason why you don't ask me is because I don't ever know what I'm going to play, even when I open up my whatever the hell gaming device. So
I get so anxious because I'm afraid it's going to be something that I've played in the past, and it's going to be something that disappoints you, and therefore by proxy it's me disappointing you.
Well, you know what's awesome is that I did not mention this the last time we recorded, but you were like, no, Jala, don't buy a 3DS. I was actually pricing them like just a few days before we had recorded.
Under what circumstances would I have said don't buy a 3DS?
Because there's games on there that you play that if I play them.
Oh no, I was talking, oh yeah, it was the Phoenix Wright. I was like, Jala, please don't buy a 3DS just for Phoenix Wright. It may piss you off. There we go. Okay. No, there's lots of amazing stuff on the 3DS. It's a, like, we are just in this golden yet waning time for portable systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, there we go.
What you got, Cole?
Man, just so given that I was sick and
Bob's Burgers in his ears.
Yep, barely able to watch Bob. I listen to a lot of Bob's Burgers, as I do. But no, did a little bit more Phoenix Wright. Haven't had the wherewithal to sit down and do Abduction. Even though that is still very much top of mind for me right now. This is Phoenix Wright, The Spirit of Justice. I mean, it's continuing apace. Like, everything that I said before still holds true. It's kind of remarkable how they have managed to stack up all of the kind of mechanics that they've introduced over the past three or four games, and kind of make them, you know, coexist. Again, just the different ways that you're able to expose information and use that to find contradictions. Like, everything goes back to that. I think the thing I want to talk about, and the thing that just is so hard to convey without actually editing it in, but goddamn, the music in this series is so fine. It is so good.
Good. What does it sound like? What type of instrumentation is it?
I mean, so if I say orchestral, it's probably not going to like get it across. It's very dramatic. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, as it kind of just scores and kind of underscores the different kind of shifts of fortune within the trials themselves, like the actual like da-da-da-da-da-da, like elevator music when you're going around and exploring stuff isn't anything, but like the trials themselves are these incredibly dramatic things, you know, because of the staging and the sound effects and stuff like that. Like, you know, they definitely heightened up everybody's slamming tables left and right. Jolly, you would like that part. So there's that, but just like they just have so many different tracks that are like, you know, eventually become Pavlovian, because it's almost like a Shadow of the Colossus kind of vibe. Like, if I'm hearing this, I know that I'm covering ground, like I'm making a push, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, like, just that has always been, like, even back to the very first one, it's always been a strength of the series. But like, to find out that they haven't been slipping, and in fact have been, you know, as they have changed the kind of like the settings in different, you know, at different points, or changed the prosecutors that you get, like, they've kept evolving it in a way that is incredibly satisfying, and like, you can just always rely on that to be to be like a really supplementary part.
What's the opposite of slipping? Like, gripping?
Yeah, they got caught gripping, which, you know, it's embarrassing, but, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. there's that. I'm about, I'm in chapter 3, I think. 3 out of 5, and there's, like, DLC and stuff. Like, I'm down for it. Again, like I said, this probably isn't going to be anything that convinces you to pick up the series. This would not be the entry point that I would suggest. Like, there are, you know, just HD collections of the first three games you can get on 3DS or on, you know, mobile. And those, I think, would be just a fine place to start. But this is a good continuation, and if I just got one of these every 2 years, I think it would be okay.
Yeah, hey. I can speak, or I can second the fact that it's good to play on mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, people would take issue with me calling them visual novels, but like, they're little comic books. You know, they're comic books that, you know, really reward paying attention and have these little challenges that ask you to, you know, again, just like, everything is about these contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I dig it, and that is all.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. Do you all want to button it up?
I do have a brief segue before the button up.
Okay.
There is one news story that might be topical that I read in passing but didn't read the full article, but apparently Danganronpa, they're going to make a version for the PS4.
They're doing Danganronpa 1 and 2, and that's going to be like a kind of double pack, as opposed to what you have on Steam right now, which is two $25 games or something like that. They're both incredibly available, but like, I enjoy those games. I think it's good that more people will get to play them. I couldn't imagine not playing it on a Vita because of the way that they use the touchscreen kind of stuff, but I imagine they will manage, and that is not the bulk of the experience. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's also, hopefully games like Phoenix Wright or whatever might become more accessible, but maybe not, but whatever.
Yeah. They just, they seem so quintessentially mobile to me. Like, I couldn't imagine playing, you know, even Steins Gate, which, you know, started as like a PC kind of thing. I could not imagine playing that kind of game. I mean, if I'm being honest, not in bed. or, you know, just kind of like sprawled out on the couch. Like it feels, it's kind of like JRPGs, where it would be very difficult to convince me to play a JRPG, like a standard ass turn-based old school style JRPG, not on a portable console anymore. Like that just is the way that you do that. But who knows? Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy or Persona will probably change my mind. Okay, now can we button it up?
Yep.
Buttons.
Do it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. We appreciate you sticking around, or if this is your first time, we hope you stick around. Let me think here. So people who are subscribing probably got a huge flood of episodes from the old, not the old series, like basically episodes 1 through 67 were put back onto the feed because I, in addition to being sick, have been spending the past, you know, week and a half or so, actually shifting the hosting services. So the hosting service I've been waiting for has released, but they don't allow for enough shows or downloads. So I'm kind of doing something different. The show's probably going to live at a different URL. Watch the social media channels. If you're subscribed right now, we're going to do as much as we can, or I'm going to do as much as I can. Just because I'm not saying that to be selfish. If I fuck up, it's all on me. I'm going to do as much as I can to make sure nothing gets, kind of upset. You know, maybe we'll see. But watch out for all of that. Hopefully everything will be for the better. And I thank you for your patience there. But otherwise, there's the usual stuff. We have a couple of level themed shirts in our store, duckfeed.tv/shirts. We have the level logo tee, which Jala has some pictures of out. And then also the sugar bone stuff, which is also good. Yeah. And
I have both of them.
Yeah. How's the sugar bone one?
I like it.
Nice.
It's nice.
Yeah. So check that out. And then there's usual stuff, Facebook, where you can, like the page and get alerts, possibly if Facebook decides to show you them, for our multiplayer, and also patreon.com/duckfeedtv, where you can support the entire Duckfeed network more broadly. I think that's everything. Am I missing anything?
No.
I think you're good.
Yeah. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I am forever Jala-chan in all the places.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And stick around to hear us deliberate over titles. Eat the leg. Okay, who's got some for me?
I got some.
Okay.
No disc picks. Outrage about the outrage about the outrage.
Okay.
That's some PVPVPWPVPVP.
Yeah.
Recursive.
Yep. Coco Nats.
God.
Spelled GNATS.
Yes.
Okay.
I get it, but we all have jobs. And finally, sneaky, sneaky guy. I didn't have a chance to cut in and tell Dennis that I liked that he was a sneaky, sneaky guy.
Oh, in Divinity? Like sneaky, sneaky guy, too. Ben, you got anything?
Yeah, I got Deadly Premonition Acapella Group. I got... I got Mop Yourself Into a Corner. I also had Coco Nats. I had Faffing Around. And I had Segway in Places.
Well, we had segways in multiple places in the episode, for sure.
So is it segway as in like shifting from one topic to another, or segway as in the mode of conveyance?
Segway as the mode of conveyance. Well,
I don't know which one, but it's in reference to Jala saying that Segway in Places is similar to Jala-chan in Places.
There we go.
Yeah,
there we go. And then I've got, so I had just disc picks, but not no disc picks. I have Swimly. mm-hmm. And then got caught gripping. So it seems so. By laughs, sneaky guy seems to have gotten the best, like the most response.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And it's out of left field. It's the one that nobody saw coming because it was so sneaky.
Yep. Oh gosh, so sneaky guy it is.
Go for it.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go to bed.
All right.
I'm going to eat.
Yes, please eat, Jala.
Yeah,
I'll do that thing.
Yeah. You should just eat during the podcast, for real though. Like,
well, I would have had to go get food and prepare it and whatever. Like that true. Requires yeah. me to go away and go make it. So, yeah,
that's fair. Yeah.
Anyway, good night.
Good night.
Night.
Bye. Night, guys.